You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast, and we're brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development creates uplifting environments that enrich the community life in Columbus, Ohio. Their team of passionate design, planning, and construction professionals are dedicated to seeing projects from initial design concept through completion. Have a property design and or development need? Build something together with 180 Property Development. Learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com. Bart Logan with you. It is the Massive Report. We're broadcasting tonight from a special news spot. It's the kids are all in. It's one of those like secret speakeasies that you need passwords to get into. Casa de Fami. We're with Sam Fami. So he's graciously putting us up right now, and probably should be putting his foot up a little bit too. But we've got Sam with us, Mike Krosky, Patrick Murphy, Alex Stanek, and fellas, we've got another Columbus Crew win to talk about. That's wild. Like this, we've gotten more in these past two episodes than I feel like the entire season, at least since summer.
Yeah, it's we're playing well. I don't think we're ever going to lose another game as long as we live.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah, it's just nothing but wins for the rest of eternity, or at least until Eloy Room retires. but in all seriousness, I think they're playing better. I think we're on the right track. We're starting to show signs of life. We played a good team this weekend, and we beat them. So that's a good sign.
Well, you know, and to accumulate points on the road in MLS, we all know how troublesome that can be sometimes, but especially at Red Bull Arena. I mean, Red Bull Arena is historically a tough place to play for anybody. If my memory serves me right, certainly one of the top two or three. The Red Bulls are top two or three in the league at home since the opening of that stadium in terms of accumulating points, which says a lot. So for the Crew to go there and collect a full win, and it wasn't a lucky win. It wasn't like a lucky bounce happened and they, you know, squeaked out a 1-0 victory. I mean, it's 3-2. And that's certainly saying that, to me, it shows that the team's headed in the right direction, though maybe too little too late, but we'll take it.
I think what was most compelling for me for this team, we talked about, you know, a few weeks ago that win in Chicago, or that draw rather, but the fact that they came back each time. And in this case, it was a little shoe was on the other foot where, you know, Crew jumped out to a lead, or first case, New York scores a goal against the run of play, but then Crew get a lead, have that lead taken away, and you were just it felt like earlier in the season that could have all imploded after that penalty was awarded. And in this case, Pedro Santos comes in and gets another one to get a road win. And as you alluded to, Mike, one of the toughest road environments. And I thought that was very telling about this team, that there was no give up in them.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the aspects of the game was, hey, sometimes PKs can demoralize, especially a soft one. I mean, yes, I didn't have a huge problem with the ref calling, especially going to VAR and everything, but it wasn't like he hacked the guy in the box or anything like that. And so sometimes when those go against you, and especially given the way this season has went, it's easy to go, well, here we go again, and especially after giving up a goal. But, you know, they kept fighting, and that's what's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this is not what we were seeing from this team, you know, even a few weeks ago. I mean, we could talk all we wanted, and we said this last week, about, you know, how they were playing well enough to get wins, but they just, you know, for this reason or this reason or this reason, it wasn't happening. And now 2 weeks in a row, and even if you want to include the tie with the Fire, things are starting to happen. They're starting to find ways. Yes, they give up two goals, but they're able to score three. I mean, when was the last time they scored three goals? When was the last time, you know, you started to expect them to score goals? That's what, my math is bad, 7 goals in the last three matches now. So, you know, for a team that was struggling to score goals so much through the, you know, the majority of the summer, to finally start to get things going, you know, you can credit the national team guys getting back. You can credit the new guys starting to get into the mix. And even if they're not starting or playing, they're in practice every day. They're pushing other guys. So, you know, there's starting to be something here. And you know, we'll see. Bart and I were talking on the way here. They've got quite a ways to go to get, you know, postseason or whatnot. But, You know, at least it's fun to watch right now, and you're starting to see a belief with this team that maybe wasn't there a couple weeks ago.
Well, and I think if you talk about those guys that made the difference, yeah, the return of the national team guys, that was key. But I don't think any player was at least more of a catalyst for Crew in this game than Luis Argudo. Gets his first career MLS goal, I believe, adds an assist. I say with the penalty, that counts for a yellow card and a Tony Chani hat trick in my book. But I was hounding on Luis Argudo earlier this season, especially when he was first starting to get starts for this team. I didn't really understand why. And to your credit, Patrick, and there are some others that, you know, were saying, well, Caleb sees something in this guy. He's a little bit Mike Krosky as well. You know, he's got that attitude, whatever it might be. But I think you saw kind of the whole package from Luis Argudo, the good and the bad sure. in this game. But you saw also that when he brings it and when he brings all that to the table, he can be a real difference maker, and he was Saturday.
Yeah, I thought he played really well. I think that he's one of these players where at least he's young, mm-hmm. and so if he's giving up dumb penalties or if he's making mistakes and losing possession or whatever, you forgive it because he's building, you know, his experience. He's getting that experience that he needs so that he can be a better player for the Crew in the future. The one mystery for me is how David Guzman is still seeing the pitch. I really don't understand at all.
We have a question about that later, so we can really dive into that on that one.
I was at Fido in Bridge Park in Dublin for the game and with a bunch of people, and as soon as they announced that, everybody was just kind of looking at each other like, wait, what is going on? It was a strange one. And I thought that we were a worse team after that sub. But other than that, excuse me, I think the team's playing really well. So
I think with Guzman, it was just there's who else are you going to put in if Trapp has an injury? I mean, I don't know who else goes in that role.
Well, I think that you can find somebody else at this point. I would rather put in another defender, honestly.
No, I would.
I don't like Guzman. I don't like him in a Crew shirt. I don't like the fact that he's wearing the number 9 shirt.
It is weird. I don't like that.
Especially because Jordan Hamilton is now wearing number 5, and that
just doesn't make sense.
While Patrick Goldan is a big fan of guys wearing weird numbers. When Guzman got here, one of the first things, just chatting with him while we were waiting interview, I asked what number he was going to wear, and he told me, I think 5, and then he was wearing 9 the next day, and it never made sense to me at all.
That is weird.
Can you ask him why he picked the number 9 shirt?
I feel like that's got to be like one of those things where Caleb's looking almost as like a challenge to other guys, those other, you know, young strikers, if it's Romario Williams or whomever, or if the Crew were to bring in another guy, it's that sort of, you got to earn this, and until then I'm putting it with the guy that I trust, he's my guy, and you know, maybe it just pisses off those strikers even more to see David Guzman, makes him want to earn that 9.
Well, and that's the thing we're gonna have to remember with Guzman is, you know, he is Caleb's guy, and you know, whether he's performing up to the standard that we expect or not, he's going to see minutes until they get somebody else. And, you know, I think you do see moments of quality with him. Like when he's on the ball, I think there's times when you're watching, especially if you're really paying attention, where he does some things that, you know, he has that level. He's not overly athletic, and he doesn't always make up for that with his work rate, especially getting back. And that's where it's been the most frustrating, I think, to watch is, you know, the ball gets turned over, whether it's him turning it over or someone else. And, you know, you need somebody that's going to get back. You know Artur's going to run back. You know Will's going to run back most of the time for both of them. And, you know, while, you know, they may not make the crunching tackle that Guzman sometimes does, you know, at least you know they're going to get back there. And I actually thought he was better at doing that in the second half in this game when he came in. Still not enough. But, yeah, he Caleb trusts him implicitly, and you know, so you're going to see him for a while, and you know, whether they go out and address that position in the off season or something along those lines, you know. But I don't think Artur has consistently played at a level where you can say he has to be starting, you know. And Will, you know, has been hot and cold this year. Obviously missed the time with the national team, so you know, it's a it's not like anyone's really won those jobs in the center midfield, and, you know, you're a surefire starter. I mean, you know Will's going to start, let's be honest, if he's healthy. But, you know, has he earned it with his play this year? It's, you know, it's been a little inconsistent, I think.
Well, yeah, I thought that was a little bit interesting just with that, Will, because, you know, unless that was a health issue, if he pulled something. I thought it was odd to see Will pulled at halftime.
Yeah, it was a knee, was what somebody told
me. Okay, well, that's what I wanted to clarify.
Minor thing.
It didn't seem, you know, it wasn't as if Will was starting all those games for USA in the Gold Cup. And, you know, they'd gone a week between games, so the fitness shouldn't have been the issue. Well, you'd think, at least, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Guzman, you know, you're talking about the good things he does. I think one of the parts of his game that gets underlooked is he switches the ball. He switches the point of attack, and I think that's so critical for that role. Will's been doing a lot of the, you know, maybe one or two a game, he does the long diagonal balls, which is part of what you're looking for. But Guzman will receive, immediately turn, and send the ball to the next player to him on the other side of the field, which is critical to keep the opposing defense going side to side. That's how you break them down. And Artur doesn't really do that much. He's more of a back passer, kind of hitting the reset button. So I think that is a part of Guzman's game that I like. But even with the Timbers, there were certain aspects of his game that I didn't love so much. Like, he gets really crummy yellow cards, crummy fouls that are absolutely unnecessary. So I get the frustration. But again, knowing that he's Porter's guy, I just don't know another person who would come in that role. I mean, it's easy to say, well, put a defender in there, but this isn't
Sosa.
FIFA, right?
I mean, Sosa. You got Sosa sitting on the
But
bench.
I think he would push too high up. He wants the ball at his feet to attack. He's not going to sit there.
Yeah, you could have Artur sit there, couldn't you? I mean, I would switch Artur's role and Will's role and bring Sosa in as the creative mid and have Artur drop as more of an anchor. That's because I'm a Guzman hater at this point. And it started when he took that stupid 9 shirt, but, you know, it's a dumb reason to hate somebody, but, you know, we had Miram with the 9
too.
For like a long time, right, guys? And he wasn't a striker. And then we give it to a midfielder. We're going to have a goalkeeper wearing the number 9 in like 3 years.
That would be awful.
And we're moving further back.
Speaking of the number 9 position, I know we were talking before, Alex, and you'll give your opinion, but I thought Giassi played really well in this game. Doesn't score, has chances again, doesn't score. Did get the assist, had the header that led to Argudo's goal. But the role that he played was very tactical, and they worked on this. We were out at we got to watch all of training, I think, Tuesday last week. And they wanted, especially with two young center backs in Krenali and Keita, they wanted, knowing that New York's going to press and, you know, try and let those center backs have the ball, but as soon as they see the opportunity to press, you know, get on them and try and force mistakes, they wanted the outside midfielders to tuck in, especially if they were being man-marked, and have Zardes run into the channel behind and win the second ball. And that was something that Caleb stressed a lot. And you saw it on that Argudo goal. He runs in behind where a winger normally is making that run. They play a long ball. You know, it was basically right off the kickoff, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get Zardes, and that's, you know, a smart it lets it bounce, smart flick. You know, I don't even know if he knew Argudo was going to be there, but put it in the mixer. And you saw him do it several times, getting into those channels. And, you know, it was tactically what they wanted him to do. Now, you still want Giassi scoring. The guy's getting paid DP money at this point, and, you know, he's a streaky scorer. I think, you know, once he gets one, he'll start to get a few, like we saw early in the season. But I did think that tactically he played exactly the way they wanted to, and I think was a big reason why the offense was as effective as it was.
I like Zardes in some aspects. I almost tweeted this during the game. I think if Zardes could finish the way an above-average Major League striker, a Major League Soccer striker finishes, he would be a $20 million striker.
That's a little high, I feel like.
The only thing that holds him back. Well, this is a market where you have a guy, you know, you have players who are very good but not amazing as 100 million now, euros. So I think 20 million U.S., as the starting striker for the U.S. national team, if he finished the way Jozy Altidore or Clint Dempsey in their prime finished, he would be a $20 million player.
Well, I think
Dempsey would be a $20 million player easily in this market, if not more than that. during his heyday.
I don't know where you're getting these numbers.
Mm-hmm. I'm pulling them out of nowhere, but I'm saying
because I just don't understand.
You got guys who are way more than that at this point. Mediocre.
20 million seems about 10 times too high.
Goalkeepers go for 60 these days, so I'm confident with that number. But my point is that his lack of finishing is the thing that is holding him back. And really making it hard to make the argument that he's worth the money we're paying him right now, I think. I thought he had a really good game for Zardes. I think that the back heel was incredible that almost led to the goal. But the other things that he did, and I was talking about this, I've started applying this test to everything Zardes does. And I think I'm going to keep this for every striker. And just I call it the Jairo test. And it's if Jairo Arrieta could have done what the player did during his time at the Crew,
he would have been offside.
Then it's not worthy of a compliment. If it was within Jairo's, wheelhouse, it doesn't count. It's not good enough. He's a DP. Our best DP right now is Pedro Santos. Which, if you would have said that a year ago, I would have called you crazy. But he's the best.
You are not
DP
wrong
right
about the last two sentences you had. Everything prior to that is insanity. I'm wondering if you are part of Skip Bayless's family or something of that nature, because none of this makes sense.
I think that he is not the kind of person that you want to hang all of your hopes and dreams on from a goal-scoring standpoint. I feel like a lot of the way this team is set up is still kind of in that Berhalter-esque mold where the vast majority of your goals are going to come from your striker. We're having to try to find other ways to do that, but he is basically playing like an 11 or even a 10 where he's facilitating other people scoring goals. His finishing, and he has had many opportunities where it's an empty net. He had that counterattack where he was through on goal that he completely wasted. There's at least one moment
there when he's running in the goal, and if he just takes the correct touch.
Yeah.
He's fine and probably can slot it, but because he takes touch to the right a little bit on like his third or fourth dribble, and it just puts him off, and you could tell from there that was not going to go well.
And there's at least
a finesse shot from time to time from him. He doesn't have to blast everything.
Thank you. So one of the things I said during the game on the shot we were just talking about is, did he even look at the goal on that? Like, he just ripped it and prayed that it would go somewhere in the vicinity of the giant goal. So I get your frustration there, because there are times where it's just like, what the hell is this guy doing?
I think Gaston Saro can finish as well as Jossie Zardes in his current form. You put Gaston Saro in that exact same position and he buries him.
I'd just like to point out,
put him up there, who cares?
We're talking about him as if he doesn't score goals. He's tied for the team lead, which is really just to transition into Pedro Santos, which you brought up a minute ago.
Mm-hmm. My guy.
Coming into this year, so much criticism, and obviously, he rightfully so in terms of goal scoring. And he's another guy I think that did a lot, especially under Greg, that didn't get recognized. But 7 goals this year, 1 his previous year and a half with the club. I don't know if it's something Caleb's doing or if he just finally feels comfortable and is starting to finish. But I mean, the 2 goals were huge on Saturday. Most of his goals this year have been important goals for kind of the way the season's gone. I think whatever has triggered him to start finding the back of the net, they need to bottle that and keep it going.
I think it's freedom. He's the type of player who I feel like needs that ability to not feel so robotic the way Berhalter played. And it's interesting because, Berhalter brought him, but you can see it. It reminds me almost a little bit, I'm not comparing the two, but just for the sake of the discussion, the freedom that Valeri played with under Porter. I mean, we saw that with Higuain for sure, the start of the season. And I've seen Santos has kind of taken that role, even when he's not playing in the same 10 type of role. He's playing with the freedom, with the creativity to know, hey, I can drop back far, I can cut into the pocket, I can do pretty much whatever I want. And I think a player with his ability, skill on the ball, is exactly what a guy like him needs. Let me finish. One thing that I asked him earlier in the season was that, what is the difference? What's making you play better? He just said confidence. And I wonder if it's a mix of the confidence, because I have the freedom, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, no. I was just going to basically completely agree with you. In preseason, he had that goal, and they asked after the game. I don't remember who asked him.
When, Charleston Battery?
Somebody did.
Was it that game?
Yeah, it was one of those Charleston games. I don't know which one it was, the Carolina Cup games. Uh-huh. And he was asked after the game, you know, well, how are you? You looked really good out there. You know, what's the answer here? And he said, well, Caleb said to shoot. You know, just Caleb told me to shoot. I think he's got the confidence now to not be the guy who sets up other people, but to be the guy that puts it in the back of the net.
Sure.
And in this system, he's got that freedom to cut in, make those plays happen. And in when on the goal that he had, he was pretty far in, but he needed to be there, and that was the right spot to be. And under Berhalter, he might have got yelled at for being where he was.
Sure.
So I think that this has been really good for him. I think he's earning his paycheck and then some at this point, which is weird, honestly, in a lot of ways. But he is maybe our best player.
He's definitely
now that Stefan's gone
in MVP of the season. I would say at this point,
yeah, which is crazy because he was probably the opposite of that last year. But I'm thrilled. Yeah,
yeah.
Montreal did, but not Santos.
Who?
I can't remember his name.
Oh. Yeah, he's playing great.
Looking at the other end, we, you know, saw a couple. We've been seeing it again, and we've talked about it, that, you know, for all the bad of all the injuries and everything, it's good to get a chance to see the young kids, especially at the center back position where we've got a lot of depth. But again, I think you saw some of the shortcomings for the youngsters in Crenali and Keita on that goal. Both of them, you know, beaten by, I think, was it Royer?
No, it was White.
Oh, White yeah,
on the
sorry.
First one.
Yeah, White on first one. Yeah, Royer on the second. Who really just, I mean, wanted that one more. He jumped up between both of them, and I don't know how tall White is, but I guarantee
it's
both
like
5'10". Of them have, yeah, at least 3 or 4 inches on him. What I was encouraged with that, especially, you know, Alex Crenali, who's kind of been in the doghouse for a little bit, at least here on this podcast, for his performance a few games back against Seattle. But the way he responded to that, specifically, you know, going up, he was the one who played that long ball that led to that second goal. And I thought it was a really good response from the young center backs in this game. They ended up playing a pretty strong game.
Absolutely. I mean, that goal, I don't know how many times you guys watched it, but I rewound it and watched it numerous times. How did that happen? I mean, the ball dropped right in between them on a guy who's 3 or 4 inches shorter than both of those players. It's just, if that ball goes 6 inches any other way, it's not going to go in. I mean, that was just a perfectly dropped ball right on his head, and he finished it well. I mean, he's been on a run since Bradley Wright Phillips got hurt. So, you know, I don't want to say it's unlucky because I think that term gets thrown around a little too much, but it was an unfortunate play because both the guys had him sandwiched. That's what you want on a striker like that, to have him bookended. He was. You think, ball's in the air. These guys have 4 inches on them. We'll get it. So it is unfortunate. But, yeah, I mean, Crenali had that beautiful ball. And I don't know. I mean, maybe you can speak to this, Murph, but I don't know if that kickoff, was that something that was specifically worked on or no?
Yeah, I don't know if they designed that play. Like I said earlier, they were working, you know, the idea, but it would not surprise me. I mean, you know, if we're going to play this way and we have a chance to run it off the kickoff, why would you not?
It definitely looked like it was something off the training ground. That was something that I had mentioned on Facebook or something, and somebody said you would consider that a set piece. Well, it's not necessarily a set piece as much as just like it is something that you work on in the training ground.
Play,
yeah,
you know, of some sort. I think you've all said it well about the center backs, and then Caleb talked about them after the game, that, you know, he thought they played an important part in the win. It wasn't perfect, which I think, you know, based on the goal and a couple other nervy moments, we can all agree with. But, you know, that it's funny when you talk about that first New York goal, because to me that's what's happened to the Crew all season. You know, a ball gets played in right to the right spot, and they're getting punished on nearly every chance they give up. Mm-hmm. But before, they weren't scoring. And now they've figured out ways to start scoring. And, you know, that was the difference in this game. You know, they get punished again on a PK where, you know, Argudo makes a, you know, silly grab on his shirt, and then the VAR catches it. And, you know, so again, they, you know, punished when maybe other teams get away with a play here or there, or White doesn't head that ball exactly right, you know, whatever. But the confidence to not drop your heads, to keep playing, you know, and then to find those goals, I think was important. And, You know, I think the center backs at points later in the game made good plays to avoid, you know, opportunities that could have been there. So, you know, they do deserve credit. But that was the biggest thing that stood out to me. It was just, you know, hey, we gave up another goal that, you know, we probably shouldn't have. Let's fight back. Let's not let this one get away.
Ken, I'd like to point out the Hector Jimenez pass.
Yes. Just in general, they were so crisp. Probably the most crisp the through balls have been all season. Absolutely. But Hector Jimenez, I was going to bring that up if you didn't. Like, he looked terrific. And that ball, oh, my goodness.
You couldn't. So I mean, that was pretty. That was a pretty ball.
That was a FIFA pass.
100%. Absolutely.
In the first half, he played the same ball, but it curved out.
Mm.
The second half, he played that exact same ball, but it
curved
in.
Yeah.
That was the difference.
Yeah.
Because Guto was on it. He just couldn't catch in the first half because it was curving out.
I get that Hector is kind of LA Galaxy's guy, but he's quietly become...
He's been
been
with
the crew a lot longer,
Has he?
Yeah, he was only with the Galaxy for, like, what, 3 years?
Yeah, something like that.
He's not, like, legend territory, but he's definitely approaching, like, player of historical importance of some level territory, I think. He's one of those guys that will look back on and be like, man, Hector was great.
Yeah.
Well, he just does whatever the heck you need him to do.
And, like, however this season ends, he's been huge this year. Yeah. I mean, he's always been, you know, Greg always used him in the different roles, and that's obviously what he's been used in this year. But, you know, because they didn't have a rash of injuries like they have this year, he's, you know, I mean, he didn't play many games. You just didn't see him. And so the stuff he does in training and whatnot, and he's one of the key leaders, you know, especially on the training ground, probably didn't get seen as much as it should have. And this year you've really seen it. And, you know, he's not the most talented player on the field.
Right.
But he knows how to play different roles. He's smart. You know, he doesn't usually make a mistake that's going to cost you. If it does, it's usually down the field and he hustles back. Or it's, you know, a bad cross or, you know, something that's not going to hurt your team. And, you know, he's just a smart, solid soccer
player. He's a serviceable player. And that's what you want, because you know what you can expect. Some guys that are really good, maybe they have a higher ceiling, but they're Jekyll and Hyde, right? A guy like this, you know, I don't have to worry about anything. That part of the field's going to be fine. And just for the sake of the discussion, he's played almost three times as many games with the crew, which is great.
No, yeah, a Swiss Army knife. And I think also, correct me if I'm wrong, he was awarded the captain's band after Will Trapp came off. So again, you know, speaking to your point of the leadership and how, you know, this is multiple regimes that have said, you know, yeah, there might be guys that are more talented than Hector Jimenez, but I can't get rid of this guy.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those, I think that, you know, Luis Argudo, although they're not maybe wired quite the same way, has the potential to be a Hector Jimenez type player. Sure. Not quite as versatile in being that, you know, a defensive player, but he can play all the midfield positions just like Hector can. And, you know, has that, if he can get, you know, that sort of consistency in his form, I think he could really carve out a niche for himself like that.
He can play probably six different roles in this team. He's on
anything but striker and center back.
He's on $200,000 a year. He's on less than half of what Artur is on. It's just it's common sense to keep him for as long as he wants to play for the crew.
Mm-hmm.
I would offer him, you know, a deal.
There'll be more on that later when we get to the questions.
Ooh.
That's a little thing called a preview, you guys, or a teaser.
A teaser.
Radio tease.
Looking, you know, here's, I guess, one general question. Are we seeing a crew team that's, you know, that's picking it up or turning it around, playing better? Or is this a team that's just, for lack of a better, regressing to the mean? In this case, it's, you know, progressing to the mean rather than falling down. But I've felt, and I know that it's very much, you know, there's the whole, you know, Porter out crew that everyone's was so furious that he would always, you know, what's his excuse this time? Our expected goals was supposed to be this, but you didn't score a goal. But it did feel like this team was not as bad as how historically bad they were throughout that stretch, that it was only, you know, a play or two here. And obviously that's soccer. So that's going to be and you can't hang your hat on, oh, well, but for one play, we would have been right in that. But it didn't feel like they were ever quite that bad.
No.
So is this team, you know, getting back to where they should be?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not expecting this big ascension to where they're going to rip off 11 straight wins or something like that. But I do think we are getting closer to what this team's really about. I mean, one of the things on the broadcast that Dwight Burgess mentioned is that some of the bounces that went in the Crew's favor in this game is not something you would have seen in the previous games, which I think is absolutely true. And I'm not a person who believes in luck or something like that, but it did seem like this team was snake-bitten at times. But in the last few games, you know, they say you kind of create your own luck. You know, in the last few games, the lucky bounces have went in the Crew's favor for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. But I think moving forward, you're going to see more ups and downs, but I think we're going to start seeing more of a level playing field where it's not going to be anywhere close to this 1 win and 15
yeah,
games.
Or,
and I think you also have to take into consideration a lot of those games was, you know, maybe a post here or a missed opportunity there or a bad bounce where if one little thing in a couple of those games go in the Crew's favor, they win 4 games. So it doesn't look nearly as bad. Or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they win 6 games or whatever. It got – each game, it just got compounded more and more ridiculously bad. But the team wasn't playing that poorly. That's the thing. And I think David Akam said it, that he's played on crummy teams in Chicago. They were crummy.
Yeah.
This team isn't that team.
And one thing he told us last week, and I don't know if this is what you're referring to, but that on those – that one specific Chicago team he was referring to, you know, there was a lot of negativity. There was a lack of belief that started to creep in as they were losing. And this team didn't have that, you know? And I mean, as negative as it got on Twitter and, you know, even on this podcast at times, it's hard to lose that many games in a row and not get negative. This team stuck with it. And I think they looked at the film, and that's something that a lot of people don't do. You watch the game once and you're like, well, we lost and we couldn't score and da-da-da-da. But, you know, they go and they look at the film and they see the positive things. And it's easier to point these out now that they're finding ways to win games and score goals and, you know, look like a real soccer team. But they, you know, they saw that the opportunities were there, that the defending was there if you just make the play. And Caleb said it all year. It's about the plays in the boxes. And they weren't making those, but they were creating them or defending them. And, you know, one thing would go wrong here, one thing would go wrong there, and, you know, they were in every game. And I think that's what they realized, and that's why they were able to keep their heads up, you know. Go back to that Chicago team that Akam is talking about, and they're losing games 3-0, 4-0. You know, you start to see a team quit, and, you know, aside from, I think, the LAFC game, you know, the Crew have been in every match, and even that game. It's the 85th game, minute, yeah, and it's 1-0, and, you know, you have a miscommunication between Bendick and Jonathan. So, you know, pointing that stuff out while you're losing is tough to do because it sounds like excuses.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you can look at it as an excuse or a reason. And when you start to win games, that stuff becomes more apparent. And I think that's ultimately what's happened. And that's why the team was able to stay positive and try and keep things going, especially when guys were out and injured and national team and whatnot.
I don't think Twitter and Facebook are good measuring sticks for that. And sure. I'm not saying you are, but I'm saying, you know, fans saying that generally fans don't have the greatest barometer on that kind of stuff because they're too emotionally tied in, right? And so they don't see things in the big picture. And I think coaches and players have to see, especially coaches, have to see the big picture.
Right.
And I think that's the difference between what's coming to fruition on the field and what happened with the what was going on online with fans.
Absolutely. And speaking of what's going on online with fans, we're going to find out in a little bit after this break. You're listening to the Massive Report podcast. We're back here with the Massive Report recording from Casa de Fami. Bart Logan, Alex Stanek, Patrick Murphy, Ralph Shadell. I almost called Ralph Shadell.
Don't you ever do that. I'm sorry.
Do
you see a
Mike
white
Krosky.
Claw in my hand?
that would make it a lot easier. And then we've got Sam Fami graciously putting us up in his home and putting up with us on this podcast. A quick little news roundup before we get into our Twitter questions. First of all, quick announcement. Abubakar Keita is going to be competing in the MLS Homegrown game on July 30th. So tomorrow, that would be Tuesday for those of you that will be listening. So tonight, really, by the time you're listening to this probably. Although, you know, I think most people, you know, wait until that post comes on the Massive Report Twitter and then immediately download and listen to it every evening.
Yeah.
Sam's nodding. He's got the numbers in front of him. Tens of thousands of you that do so. We appreciate all of you. So make sure to catch that. You can catch that on Twitter. That's how big of a deal that game is.
Do they even get the Chipotle cards anymore? Do we know if they cut that?
I don't think Chipotle's a sponsor. Yeah.
So the one perk of this used to be if you played, they gave you free Chipotle for a year. Chipotle would like kick in. Apparently, Chipotle can't afford that anymore. Or MLS.
Has Donovan coaching this team again?
He should. It does not say. Nor doesn't say, you know, who
is he
else
playing
is on
again?
This team?
Like, I feel like he comes out.
Is he playing for them? Yeah.
He's with the Sockers. San Diego.
I want to see Ibrahimovic coach the team because I think that would be hilarious.
You see elbows flying everywhere.
I want to see one of these youngsters cry on the sideline because they just get berated by Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Or elbowed.
Hey, it'd be fine. He doesn't elbow people. He kicks them in the back of the head, which is always joke. Really Nobody enjoyable.
Oh, no.
I He's said great. The same thing 5 seconds ago.
Sorry, I'm busy.
We're all good. The other just little piece of news, crew fans, the MLS Community MVP contest is underway. Y'all need to go to MLS Works. You'll find it. Just follow the GCG bag on Twitter and you'll see them constantly tweeting about voting. But everybody needs to vote for our boy Jeremy Holland from CRIS, Community Refugee Immigration Services. He's the CRIS nominee for Community MVP, and they do some incredible work. Just incredible work. Support them and make sure to vote for Jeremy. We got to get him the win for this. Again, just you'll be able to find it. It's on the MLS homepage or MLS Works Community MVP. Vote for Jeremy Holland. You can vote like multiple times in a day. Just open like a different browser and you can keep voting. It's pretty easy, like relatively compared to trying to vote in like an all-star game in MLB or like NHL.
Or MLS.
It is way easier to do it. So stuff those ballot boxes. We're going to do it. Jeremy's winning. The other piece of news before we get into our Twitter Q&A. There's a little announcement that came out this morning. Columbus Crew SC and Legends announce a wide-ranging partnership agreement for the new stadium and training facility. Legends, as the presser bills them, is a leader in global planning, sales, hospitality, and they are going to have a partnership for project development and commercial sales rights for the new stadium and training facility. Patrick Murphy, what does any of that mean?
That's a good question, right? So from what I understand, and this I heard about this 3 weeks ago or so, and my understanding is that this group's going to come in, they're going to kind of oversee everything that goes into opening the new stadium. And I don't believe that has anything to do with like the construction and stuff of that. I think the crew will handle that with hopefully local companies. But the, you know, the marketing, the ticket sales, you know, things like that, while the crew's workers, the people, you know, at the fine front offices at Mapfre Stadium, continue to work their magic, trying to build attendance, build season tickets, all that stuff. So, you know, they basically are a, you know, for lack of a better term, a mercenary company that comes in, and they've done it with a lot of stadiums around the world, stays for roughly 2 years, gets your stadium open, gets things kind of going, and then they pull back out. And from my understanding, the workers, while they're here in Columbus, will look, if you saw them, just like crew workers, you know, they will dress like crew workers. You won't even be able to tell the difference. So, you know, in principle, this sounds like a great idea, and it might be, you know, I'm not to say that this isn't a smart move by the team. My question is, well, a couple questions is how, does this group, you know, work with the Columbus market? A lot of the places they've gone have been like opening the new Yankee Stadium. Well, you know that the Yankees have a very big established fan base, you know. They opened the stadium in Atlanta for the Falcons and Atlanta United. Well, there were 72,000 people already on the United season ticket waiting list before they even played their first game, roughly. So, you know, what do you do now when you're coming into a city like Columbus who, you know, obviously fought hard to save their team, but are still working to get the ticket numbers where they want them to be, you know, and haven't seen that growth just yet. How do you get that fan base ready to go in the new stadium? And some of that's going to be on the crew, the people working at Moffray Stadium to get that going. And then what happens when they do pull out and, you know, it's left to the crew to run this thing for years, you know. The stadium can't just be a Band-Aid for 5 or 6 years and draw attendance because it's new, and then, you know, you go back to struggling attendance-wise, you know, and I think that Columbus is a difficult market to sometimes have a professional team or any team not named Ohio State Buckeyes football, but, you know, they want to build this as good as it can possibly be in Columbus, and I think there's ways to do that. But, you know, where does this company leave things when they're gone, and how does the crew then take that and build on it? And those are my questions about, you know, kind of having a secondary party come in and run the operation for you as you open a new stadium.
I mean, I think that they just need to try to get the crew set up in a way where they're not hemorrhaging money. I don't think that we need to be selling out the new stadium every week. I don't think that we need to be coming close to sellouts every week. I think that would be great for the first couple years, but I think when you look around the league at all of the flashy new stadiums that opened up, places like Orlando, places like Seattle even, you know, they start really strong and then they fade away. Attendance drops off pretty significantly, especially in Orlando. The last couple weeks I've watched Orlando City games. It's maybe half full. Philadelphia. I mean, I feel like this is just part of the process in Major League Soccer. I think,
but
that
you
the
don't
way,
want it to be right. I mean, well, like in an ideal situation,
you don't. But I think that they need to be planning as if that's what could possibly happen, where the stadium levels out at 15,000 or something like that. I think that the important thing to keep in mind with owning a Major League Soccer franchise, and the reason that you have these football owners buying in, is it's easy money. Even if you lose $3 million a year, you're making so much money in just the appreciation of your asset. So whether we have 12,000 at the end of the day or 15,000 or whatever, I think that we will still be in a better position with the kind of ownership that we have, who are, you know, set with this city, set with this team, set with the history of this team, and really want to buy in on this for the long term. So we'll have to wait and see what this group does. If they can get a couple years of big growth, you know, let the city see and experience Columbus Crew Soccer, maybe we'll get a bunch of new fans who will help buoy those numbers long term. But if the numbers drop off after a couple years, and I'm sure that they will, with or without legends, I think that'll be just fine by ownership. I think they, you know, have kind of baked that into the whole plan from even before they bought the team. They did their due diligence. They know the challenges in the market. So we'll wait and see. But I'm encouraged by the move. I just think that people need to, you know, keep expectations in check with this new stadium, because I don't think it's going to be Atlanta. I don't think we're not going to be Atlanta. We're not going to be Portland. We're Columbus, Ohio. And whether it's the Crew or the Clippers or the Blue Jackets, you know, there's some empty seats at those games.
Well, I think that's also why I felt like the best comparison is Sporting Kansas City when they rebranded. I mean, I've said it numerous times on this podcast, and they sell out still. And the stadium's been open for, I don't know, what, 7, 6 years? I mean,
2011.
Okay, so 8 years. So I don't see why we couldn't be like that. It's a relatively small stadium. I think theirs holds 19 and change. Ours is going to hold approximately that, right?
20 is what they've said.
Yeah, so I think that's something that's doable in a reasonable sized market, and it's a market that continues to grow, and it has the demographic that MLS wants. So I think 12,000 as a, you know, that would not be acceptable. I think 15,000, 16,000 at minimum should be what you see in 5 years of the stadium being open. How and why it can't be like a Kansas City, I don't see any reason why it couldn't be, and especially with an ownership with deep pockets and has ran, you know, the Cleveland Browns for a number of years now. I think we need to raise the bar a little bit. I hear what you're saying,
yeah,
and I'm not saying that's incorrect, but I think we need to raise the bar and go, we're better than that, and especially the fact that we were this close from having the team just go away. We can't just go, well, 12,000, 15,000 is fine. No, let's sell this place out. It's not that hard.
Well, yeah, and no one would love that more than I would. But I also think that when you look at
someone
Kansas City,
I mean, well,
if you owned the team, that would probably be, yeah, it'd probably be better. But Kansas City is the exception to the rule. Most cities in Major League Soccer, they have one of these major events, whether it's a big signing or a stadium opening or an expansion into the city, and you see this big spike in attendance, and then it gradually falls off over a couple years. The Crew are almost 20 years old at this point. We've been around. We've seen and done pretty much everything in the league. You know,
except those big signings.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. We've had some, you know, Jairo Arrieta. We talked about him earlier. Yeah, remember when we almost signed Falcao? That was pretty cool.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Sebastian Moreno.
Seba. There you go. Listen, I will talk about Sebastian Moreno for 3 hours if you let me.
We're
say
not going to talk about the
that
guy
header,
goal.
Though. Come on. 18-yard header.
I think when it's all said and done, you know, you get the stadium open and, you know, you're kind of looking back on things. I do agree with you a little bit, Alex, that Sporting Kansas City has done something very unique. You know, they were an original franchise. They rebranded, which is something the Crew did. And, you know, now they have a new stadium, and it hasn't worked for everybody to do this model. I think the Crew need to figure out how to tap into that demographic of, you know, from the kids starting at Ohio State to then 10 years after that. You know, that age group there, which I think is a large portion of what MLS has finally started to realize, hey, these are soccer fans. It's not the families. It's not, yeah, you
soccer
know.
Moms are going to come twice a year. Tops.
Right. And so how do you tap into that? You know, how do you get those people coming to games? And OSU makes it interesting because there are a lot of people that stay during the summer. And so, you know, you need to identify those people that are going to be around. But a lot of people go home, too. I mean, you know, when you're on a campus that big, people are going to do various things, or they've got internships in different cities, stuff like that. And obviously that's a big chunk of your season, you know, and how do you then, you know, schedule your games so that you're capitalizing on the right times of the year? You know, I know that's something that Bez is very big on, and he thinks that's going to help attendance a lot. And I'm not just talking weather, you know, I'm talking around events.
Yeah.
And that'll certainly help. But, you know, this all kind of has to come together. It's not going to be just on, you know, the ticket office or, you know, legends.
Legends,
I
yeah.
I keep wanting to call them legions. I don't
Heroes,
know.
Heroes, superstars.
Yeah, yeah. It's
– call them whatever.
You know, it's going to have to be this collective group that does it. And obviously, ultimately, it'll be the Crew, because that's what's going to be left behind is, you know, the people working at the stadium or wherever their new front offices are. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you fought hard to save this team, and, mm-hmm. you know, now they need fans come out to the games. They need sponsorships, partners locally, and, you know, hopefully bigger than that. You know, how do you get all these things to happen together? And, you know, it's going to take people smarter than the five of us sitting at a table talking on a podcast to do it.
I don't know. No, I think they should pay us whatever half of what they're playing Legends, and we got it. Yeah. Hey, maybe you.
Well,
no, I set my price pretty high.
Yeah, and it's, you know, having the stadium, we've talked about this a lot, having the stadium downtown is certainly going to help. I think people will be very excited about, you know, even non-Crew fans going to that stadium. I think it will be a place that even, you know, down the road, people want to go to. Right now, you take somebody to Mafre, and it's like, you know, even if the team wins 3-0, the amenity, you know, we were talking before we came back on about having real box, you know, luxury boxes. That's where you're going to make your money.
Yeah.
You know, having those type of things that, you know, are just interesting to people. You know, some people go to Ohio State football games because it's the Horseshoe. And, sure. You know, how do you, people go to Clippers games because Huntington Park's convenient and it's a nice stadium. And, you know, Nationwide Arena, same thing. You know, there's amenities there that even if you're not a big hockey fan, you know, it's a cool environment, things like that, you know. So the stadium itself should have some of that. And hopefully that attracts some people, and then they build on that and whatnot. So, you know, I think it's going to be a combination of things. I'm really interested to see how this all works because, you know, it's very different than how they did it the first time around. It was, you know, a quickly thrown together thing. There wasn't a lot of, you know, marketing about the stadium. It wasn't in a place where people wanted to go, you know, all that. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting next couple of years as they build towards that, and then once the stadium opens, and you know how the response is around town.
But one point on it, and then I think we could probably move on Twitter. But when they bill it as, you know, as one of their success stories being the new Yankee Stadium, that actually raises red flags for me for a couple reasons. I mean, first, from just the way they built Yankee Stadium, there are at least a dozen seats that are completely obstructed view that you can't see the field. But then when you look at, you know, the ideas, and as I'm, you know, reading a little bit further in the press release, the legends, they're going to work across multiple areas, including project planning, development, sponsorship, ticket sales, naming rights, marketing, technology innovations, blah, blah, blah. But you look at what Yankee Stadium they did in selling all those, you know, sponsorships, not just for the, you know, the suites, but the lower bowl. All those are, and granted it's New York, it's a different market, but it's also a larger stadium. And they sold all those out to companies because they could get money. And they sold the rights, and you're going to. It's Yankee Stadium. I want to be right there. And they're never full. You don't see anybody.
And that's baseball.
It's baseball, but it's still the Yankees, yeah. The New York Yankees. Yeah. They could put 40,000 people in that stadium every single game without a problem. They won 66 games this year or whatever, and you've got however many, you know, 3 million people within 11 square miles. You could fill that up, but they chose specific, and there's, you know, there's some middle ground. You need to make your money and stuff, and it doesn't just fill, you know, the ticket. We don't want to be FC Cincy, you know, filling with $5 tickets. But I don't want to see people get priced out and then no one's sitting in those seats.
$5 tickets, when did they raise the prices?
Well, you know, just real quick about that, when it comes to the seats you're talking about, Yankee Stadium, a lot of those, it's where those seats have access to, I don't know if buffet is the word you want to use, but
food and drink.
So you can leave your seat, go and essentially eat a phenomenal meal. And I'm not talking about like typical ballpark stuff. I'm talking like steak, the real deal type of food. So if you're somebody who's brought in there on a business, you know, trip, you're being wined and dined, I could see why somebody would just stay in the little restaurant portion, because it's just constant food and drink all you want.
Well, and that's something that the Crew are, I know, aware of. You know, San Jose, who we'll talk about here next segment, but, you know, they've got this nice new stadium. And when was the last time you saw a San Jose Earthquakes game on national television? Well, the reason you don't is because even though they've sold well this year, it doesn't ever look sold out because they have that giant bar. Mm-hmm. And Minnesota's dealt with it a little bit too,
yeah.
Where people are. And the league wants, and the TV networks want stadiums that look filled and have good atmospheres. Mm-hmm. And if you have a ton of people, you know, it's a cool idea. It's great for the people there to be able to go to this bar and you know, watch the game there and everything. But, you know, you're not getting on national TV, which then can affect, you know, sponsorship. If, you know, especially like jersey sponsorships, if they know they're going to be on national TV 12 times a year, well, you may get a different level of company interested. I'm also interested to see with the new stadium, this is a bit of a tangent, but how do they approach the food and drinks? You know, do you try, especially being downtown where there's not as much of the tailgating scene and there's a lot of other bars and restaurant options, do you try the Atlanta approach of hey, let's go cheaper, let's get people in the doors, get them in early?
They should.
Yeah, let's, you know, have some better food for a little bit cheaper than what you could get it for right around the area.
Right.
Maybe don't make drinks as crazy. And, you know, let's get people in. Let's get people spending money. Let's have a stadium that's ready to go at kickoff because people know, hey, we can eat, we can drink in there, and it's not going to cost us an arm and a leg. You know, this is a problem that is going on in sports in general. So I'll just be interested to see how the Crew choose to approach that whole situation, because I think, you know, there is a possibility that you could really do something and make a statement if you went with the cheaper food drink option.
It'll certainly be worth following. We do want to get into a couple of questions that we've gotten from fans here on the Twitters. We'll lead with one from Caitlin Dees, who had a question last week that got us a bit riled up. Since my people replacement question caused a stir last week, I'll ask another good one. In light of the recent performances alongside new acquisitions, and assuming everyone is healthy and match fit, what is our depth order on the wings? who do we see get filtered out after this season? That's a lot. So maybe, I guess it's, who do you see as the two starters at wing for this team if you got everybody healthy? And who maybe one, two players that you think could be excess when the season comes to an end?
So are we talking about today or as we move forward into next season?
I would say moving forward into next season.
Okay. As everyone's healthy.
Because, yeah, David, let's take David Akam out of the equation. I think he, you know, maybe he's part of your best 11 right now, but sure. He's gone after
okay.
this season.
Well, Diaz wasn't brought in here not to start, mm-hmm. so I think he's going to be there. Certainly Porter has shown he really trusts and loves what Pedro Santos brings. Now, obviously, Pedro Santos is going to be another year older next year. What, it'll be 32?
Yep.
32. And then you have Argudo certainly showed well mm-hmm. on the wing. I still think they're going to bring somebody else in the offseason, I hope.
Oh, Yunus, too.
He's
a winger.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a fourth. I'd still like to see another player brought in that could compete for a starting spot. But right there, I mean, those the four we just mentioned, that's mm-hmm. a pretty solid group. And it's quite a bit different already than what maybe we would have saw with Berhalter, because Argudo wasn't getting any time. He's seeing time. Diaz wasn't even here.
Yunus Bokhtar.
Yunus wasn't here either. So you're already seeing a transition from just 6 months ago. So I think next year, that would be what I'd like, that I would see. But
so
I would
Nico Hansen is your odd man out.
Oh, he is he's long gone. I forgot that guy was even on the roster.
Yeah, I think
that's Porter
telling.
Did, too.
No,
I don't think he did.
He had a couple few good weeks back in, was it 2018?
2017.
Was it 2017?
I feel like.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I think you're about right. I think it'll be Diaz probably on one side and maybe competing with another guy to be named at some point, and then on your other side, you've got Santos and Mokhtar competing for that role, and then Luis Argudo can kind of Hector Jimenez him in the midfield, because he can also play the central midfield roles. He's played the number 10 a little bit, so then you've got a guy who can kind of fill in when you need. If you want a guy with a little more bite on the wings, he's that type of guy. So I think that's what they're going to look like going forward. Assuming health and whatnot.
What does I'm not overly familiar, but what does Chris Cadden play?
They're looking at him as more of a
fullback.
Fullback. Okay. He was, my understanding, he was a winger, had to play fullback for a year because of an injury or injuries, I guess. And maybe it's been longer than that, and I'm just wrong. But they are looking at him as a guy who can back up Harry, get minutes as Harry gets older here, because he's only 24.
Right.
And, then kind of see if he can be that successor at that position.
Well, in that system, in a 4-2-3-1 like that, oftentimes the best outside backs are former wingers a lot of times. So, there's a lot of interchangeability between those roles.
I think Eddie Opoku might find himself on the outside as well, potentially.
There's a guy that I actually forgot about.
He's still
he's been on a season-long loan.
Yeah. So I don't know how they feel about that, but typically I feel like in Major League Soccer, if you're drafted and you don't find any minutes at all, that's usually not a great sign. I think this is his second season as well. Yeah. So if you're already two seasons in and they haven't gotten any value from you, they might look to move you on.
And you have to think it's not a Porter guy, right? So
he seems like a really good guy, but I just don't know if he's going to fit in with this particular team.
So we've got another question from Massive Crew Fan, and this is going to be an easy one that we should all be able to answer immediately. Who are the top five current Crew 96 players in respect to goals per 90 minutes of 2019 MLS playing time? Include all MLS teams played for this year, but not USL or foreign. Please put this as a question for the panel tonight, an interesting stat at the moment. So I obviously know all of those, but I'm going to wait to make sure that all of you,
thank you, Bart,
know all
for
of them.
Giving us that opportunity.
Well, it's goals per 90 minute?
Yes, that's right. Correct.
Well, normally that stat's goals per 96 minutes because they incorporate stoppage time and whatnot.
Ooh, owned!
So, no, I just want to point that out because I have a couple of them. I think...
Goals in extra time?
Well, no, I have a couple names. Romario Williams, for this team, obviously has probably the best on the team of guys that are playing regularly, David Akam.
Because he hasn't even played 90 minutes yet, and he has at least a goal.
He's played 40-some. Yeah. The thing I have with this is, you know, with this stat is it's tough to take value from it. Like, yes, we can talk about Giassi Zardes hasn't scored in a while, but, you know, is Romario Williams better than Giassi Zardes? And I think we can say no.
He's better at finishing.
Once he was. I think that's his third MLS goal ever. But my point is, you know, if Romario Williams were better than Giassi Zardes, Romario Williams would have found a way to be a starter in this league, you know. And
well, it's just because he was behind Joseph Martinez.
Well, he was also in Montreal, and they, you know, Drogba was the last major striker they had. But my point is that while I think you can look at this, especially as you get a larger sample size, like in Akam, who's obviously shown when healthy that he can contribute statistically. You know, I think this stat is not the most telling. You know, Jordan Hamilton, if you look at his minutes with Toronto, has been really good this year, and I'll be interested to see once he gets kind of in the groove of things. You know, I mean, Pedro Santos only has 7 goals, I guess, and has played a lot of minutes, but you know, I think he's giving you really good minutes. You know, so like,
absolutely.
That's kind of my point is it's tough to judge based on that, but you know, if the point is those are the guys should be starting, Romario Williams for Barcelona.
I have no information on the stats of this at all, but all I can say is that, you know, it's not going to matter at all once we sign Falcao in August.
Because he'll score every minute, right?
Yeah, not every minute. He's going to take some minutes off to, you know, sign autographs or whatever. We'll be so far ahead at that point that, you know, he can take his foot off the gas. He's not trying to make anybody cry, Pat.
He's Zlatan's new enemy.
Yeah.
Former United players.
Ibrahimovic is just going to decide to do karate full-time at that point.
We got another question, and we were talking about him a lot, and so maybe, I don't know, Pat, since you're closest to the team, you might have better information on this, but enter, is this actually about Falcao? No. It's about one Hector Jimenez, and wondering the contract situation with him, or the threat of you losing him. And Sean Coppins here has never been a huge fan, but this year he's been behind some big plays, which you cannot argue with. Although I'll say I've always been a huge Hector Jimenez fan.
I don't know what Hector's contract is off the top of my head. I was trying to think while you were asking that if I remember them announcing him signing a new deal, but they tend to not do that with.
They're very secret with their contracts.
Yeah, the league in general is weird like that. But yeah, unless it's a, you know, a Pipa or a Zardes, you know, they haven't announced a ton of that. You said this is what year for him here?
Six.
Yeah,
six. So, and he was in LA 3 years. Mm. All right, so if we're saying, and this is just pure speculation on my part, so say, you know, he's drafted, I bet that was a 3-year deal.
It's generally how it goes.
So he probably got a new deal around when he came to the Crew. 3 or 4 years there, so he's probably signed at least one more here. You know, I it wouldn't surprise me if he's nearing the end of that.
Right.
Now, knowing Hector decently well, it also would not surprise me if, you know, he wants to sign again here. I know he likes Columbus a lot, you know, and you know, I've never heard any reason for him to want to leave. I think that, you know, he likes this team, he likes these players, so you know, and obviously this year he's, you know, shown his worth, and you know, if I'm the Crew, I take that into consideration when, if there is need for contract negotiations this off season, and you know, maybe get him on a little bit more money if that's what it takes or whatnot. But yeah, I think he's a guy who would want to stick around just based on my.
Normally, contracts are 1 or 2 year deals with 1 and 2 year options for the team generally. So it would make sense if you look at that math that could be a deal coming up. Hector Jimenez does qualify for being a free agent in MLS because it's, what, after 8 years, if I'm not mistaken. This is his 9th season in the league, right?
Yep.
So, but again, there's no reason for him to leave.
He's
also, what, 30, 31? I mean, 30. Yeah, 30. So it's not like some team's going to break the bank for him. It'd be
the
very
only thing I could
leave.
See is, you know, he's an LA kid. If the Galaxy wanted to bring him in, or LAFC, you know, sure. I think he does, you know, wherever he's going to play, I think teams would recognize there is a value there.
Sure, sure.
And if he wants to go back to California, I didn't even think about the free agent aspect of it. You know, if he wants to go back to Southern California, obviously there's two teams out there, and, you know, no one's going to turn down a guy who can play 12 different roles.
200,000 in LA is not 200,000
clubs. And that's a very good point.
True. 70,000 in LA.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, you know, that's an interesting question, and maybe I'll approach that issue with him carefully next time I talk to him.
And then on the other side of the coin, David Guzman, his feature with the Crew. He's been playing pretty bad.
The Sean Coppins guy is just bombing us with questions. The same guy. Yeah. Again, we talked about him a little bit. I don't think he's playing pretty bad. There are instances where it's not great. But again, who else do you put there? So we kind of touched on that.
Well, and if we're talking like future, you know, again, we don't know what his contract's like or anything like that.
Pretty sure it was a 1-year deal.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, going back to what I said earlier, it would not surprise me if Caleb wants to keep him around to, you know, continue. And he's a guy who has been I've seen some things in practice where it's like, oh, that's why, you know. And maybe it hasn't always translated into the game, but when you're, you know, closer on the sidelines and stuff like that, you know, I've noticed it, and he's been a good practice player. He's not a guy, despite his kind of fiery nature in a game, he's not a guy that causes issues. You know, he seems to get along with these guys. You know, I think he fits in with the locker room well. So, you know, that's something that fans often don't consider. You know, and that's something we talked, I think, last week about Giassi Zardes. You know, he's the ultimate locker room guy. You know, so it wouldn't surprise me if Caleb wants to keep him around, but I don't know. I don't know for sure.
If you cut him, you can give the 9 shirt to somebody else, though. I mean, that's
Jordan Hamilton.
Why not? Let's do it. Jordan Hamilton, our number 9. I like it. It's got a good sound to it.
That should be a 2-stick.
It's only a matter of time. We've got some time before the Crew will be back. We'll be back after this quick break, and we'll be previewing this away match against San Jose. Hey, we're back by the Massive Report. It is segment 3, and the segment 3 is brought to you by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Follow GCG Bag on Twitter and Facebook at GCGBag96 for all the dankest memes. And you know they're dank because we're using a reference from 2015. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of Massive Report. It's a thing. Crew taking on San Jose Saturday in whatever mid-level marketing scheme stadium they've got, Avaya Stadium. I confuse them with Advocare and all those other Herbalife. All
you're
it
thinking like Amway?
Like be. Yeah, Amway. It's another.
Is that
one.
Their jersey sponsor still?
It might be. Regardless, this is a team, a San Jose team that's coming in one of the hottest in MLS. They've won 4 straight, 5 of their last 6. And I think they are top 4 in the Western Conference. They're just 2 points behind the leader in the East, Philadelphia, just showing how much depth there is in the West, how the shoe's on the other foot this season. So this is a San Jose team that went from, you know, being a laughing stock more or less last year to now they're one of the top teams in the Western Conference. And this is going to be, I mean, all these games at this point for Crew, if you want to have even a chance at making the playoffs, they're obviously a must win. That's an understanding. But, you know, what are we looking at here realistically? What's an expectation for a result here?
This is going to be a tough one. And I said the same thing last week, and obviously the Crew came out and played well, but you know, I really like what San Jose's done since, you know, roughly April.
I think they've lost like one or two games since then.
Yeah, it looks like. But a team that's plays a lot of energy, one of the better, you know, usually teams that run around a lot and, you know, play with a lot of energy aren't great passing teams. They're one of the better possession teams in the league, one of the better passing accuracy teams in the league. They don't turn the ball over a lot, which has helped them limit mistakes. And, you know, obviously if you have the ball, you're not getting scored on. I don't know how to pronounce their coach's name, but once he kind of found their guys, the right guys, and it took about till April, they started off the season with 4 straight losses and 5 of their first 6 games.
Fire
them. Losses.
That's what people were saying.
Yeah, right. And, you know, he got it figured out. And like Bart said, they've been one of the hottest teams in the league. They're very good at home. They're a fun team to watch, and, you know, so at the very least, I think this will be an entertaining game. I'm glad this is a game when the Crew have a full week off to prepare, not only just for preparation, but I think San Jose is going to run them, or make them work. And so I think that, you know, having that week to recover, they actually didn't practice today and don't have recovery or have rehabilitation, or whatever they call it, tomorrow. So they should be well rested for it, but you have to travel across the country and against a good team. You know, this, I don't think this is a fluky team or anything like that. I think they've really kind of put something together here.
Well, and, you know, and somehow, some way, the fountain of youth, Chris Wondolowski, still scoring goals and scoring in bunches, which is just beyond me at
this
point.
Bunches of meaningless goals.
Hey, but their goals are goals. Hey, we would have taken bunches or a meaningless goal at some point in time during this season.
Yes.
So, you know, it is one of those things. It's going to be tough. It's always, for whatever the reason, going east to west is always more difficult.
He's got 9 goals this year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Wow, I knew he'd scored some, but didn't it take him a while, too, because he was going after the record?
Uh-huh. And then, but he scored, what, 3 or 4 in one game?
Yeah, okay.
To break the record, and then he started scoring a little more consistently after that. Yeah. But
9 goals in 15 starts, and only 21 games played. I guess they've probably only played roughly 20, but 15 starts, 9 goals is a good turnaround.
Yeah, and especially after not scoring the first handful of games. I think it was like the first 4 games he didn't score anything. So, yeah. I don't know what it is about teams flying east to west, why that's always a difficult situation. I don't know if there's some sort of, I don't know, physics behind it or something, but
he's scoring his first 11 games.
It was that long?
Yeah. Now, granted, in one of those, or in 3 of those games, he played a total of 11 minutes. But, yeah, I mean, he started the first 5 games of the season and
didn't
had
score. No, well, nobody no was goals, scoring for them no at that point.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. So if they can do, if the Crew can do what they did in New York and just go out guns a-blazing, that's the best way you're going to get a positive result. If you can squeak out a draw, you've won.
I'm not super optimistic about this game. And I also, touching on the Wondolowski thing for a second, I feel like Wondolowski is one of those guys who makes you want to think about buying nothing but 32-year-old strikers who have like 83 ratings and finishing on FIFA and just only look at that player. I feel like finishing, if you can finish in Major League Soccer, you can basically score forever. Like, you can be a mediocre player in most aspects of your game, but if you can finish in this league, you can really do wonders. I think that's Ibrahimovic has virtually no movement anymore, but because he can finish, he's still scoring hatfuls of goals. I think this is a interesting matchup for us. I think they are a better team than we are, unfortunately, just on paper right now. With the injuries that we have, we're still a weaker squad than the San Jose team. So, yeah, if we can get a draw, that'd be great. But I'm fully prepared to lose this game, and it'll be fine.
Well, what worries me, it's not just Wondolowski. It's just the depth that they have at scoring and the secondary scoring they're getting. You know, Wondolowski's got 9, but you've got Vaca with 7, Shea Salinas, or I probably didn't
nope,
pronounce
that's right.
that one right.
All you
right.
got it.
Yeah, he's got 6. Danny Hosen's got 5. Magnus Eriksson's got 4. And then you look at Crew,
Magnus,
and it's
great name, Magnus.
Pedro Santos and Jossy Zardes with 7, and then Josh Williams and Gaston Sorrow with 2.
That's
everyone
right.
else with 1. And everyone else, by that I mean 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One of those players, Federico Higuain, isn't going to play another game this season.
And people said the Crew couldn't score. That's a ton of goals right there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just loads and loads of them.
Well, and on the other end, I will be interested to see, well, you know, what the situation is at center back this week. You know, Josh Williams was listed as out last week, but definitely was training some. Jonathan Mensah was doing some stuff. You know, can they get these guys back? Because, you know, another team that, you know, as Bart just listed off, has a number of people who can score. Not that Keita and Krenali haven't played well, but if you can get, you know, your starting level center backs, Gaston Saro as well, back in there, you know, I think you feel a little bit better about defending a team that has been potent offensively.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We talk about, you know, a guy like Shea Salinas. He's been in the league forever. That's an MLS vet. They have Nick Lima. So, yeah, this is going to be a tough one. I think the biggest thing is, yeah, if they can get even just one of those guys back, Mensah and or Williams, that would be a big step in the right direction. I would feel more comfortable with at least one.
Sir, we'll see. We'll get some picks after we get a quick plug to, again, our sponsor, title sponsor, 180 Property Development. Have a property design or development need? Build something together with 180 Property Development. Learn more at 180propertydevelopment.com. All right, we need some picks. We're going to start with you, Mike.
I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I'm going to say 2-1 San Jose.
Boo.
I know, Bart. I'm sorry.
Did you say 2-1 Red Bull last week?
No, I said 3-1 Red Bull.
Oh, okay. Well, I said 2-1 Red Bull last week, and I'm going to say 2-1 San Jose and, you know, see how this works.
Boo.
I'm going
to
say...
You know who picked the Crew to win last week?
Yes, Bart, we do.
Every time that the Crew have won, Bart has picked the Crew to win. It's amazing. It's science.
True.
It's astonishing. I'm saying 2-2.
2-2.
I think we're going to get a point, and I think we're all going to be thrilled with it.
Yeah,
I think San Jose is going to have 50 chances, and we're somehow not going to concede 3.
I'm going to go with I'm going to pick the Crew in this one. And
I'm shocked.
That's a surprise. I'm going to go with 2-1 Crew win. I think maybe Josh Williams goes and takes the number 3 spot on the scoring depth chart all for himself.
Are you thinking of going from Harrison Awful by any chance?
No, not this. As much as I don't think Harry's going to score his 5 goals this year. I just was so sure it was going to happen, and then he got injured. And that's the only reason he hasn't scored 5 goals. Let me be clear. No, but that should about do it for this week. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Thank you, Sam, once again, for opening up your home to these degenerates. And for Alex, for Pat, for Mike, for Sam, for Brian, who wasn't with us, but he is in spirit. It's Bart signing off. We'll see you. Bye, buddies.